now we're joined by Kim Smith from the Federal Aviation Administration. And what do you do with the FAA?
Well, I work in aircraft certification.
I manage the Small Airplane Directorate, which means we have responsibility for the design certification of all small airplanes, basically 19 passengers and below.
Okay. Now, before we get into that a little bit, I know you were here for the last hour, or the last 15-minute segment where we were discussing things with the NTSB investigator, and we were talking a little bit about the NTSB-FAA relationship. Yep. So would you like to maybe speak from the FAA side about some of the questions and things that we discussed?
I will. I think one of the points he made that was really good is we do have two different roles. The NTSB goes out to see what causes an accident, what you need to do to fix that and make sure it doesn't happen again. We, the FAA, also care about aviation safety, but we always have to consider the economic impact of decisions we're making and technical feasibility. Like he said, they may recommend to do something, but if the technology isn't there to do it yet, we may have to delay meeting the intent of the requirement, the suggestion for, you know, years. And if it's too expensive to the fleet, we may not be able to propose it either. So we do have different roles. We look at it from different ways, which I think probably is a good thing in the big picture.
And I know he mentioned the GO team. Mm-hmm. With the, and there are FAA members involved sometimes with these GO teams? Or
there sure are. We have an Office of Accident Investigation that sometimes sends people out. And also on some of the smaller, like the GA accidents, maybe helicopters, maybe we send from aircraft certification some of our own experts who know that airplane better than maybe the NTSB or the particular accident investigation person would, and they can help provide technical data, technical information about an airplane.
And how is that organized? Let's say at an accident site, there's, you know, the and then you have local authorities sometimes that would be involved, particularly, I guess, depending on the nature of the accident. So how is authority in the hierarchy of the investigation structured?
Well, the way it would happen, if an accident happened, the first on the scene probably would be an FAA person, maybe from the local FISTO or somebody. They may be first on the scene. But once they come there, NTSB has responsibility of the accident site. We work with them. We collaborate. Usually at the scene, people work very, very well together.
And then, as Robert Benson was discussing, they only make recommendations.
Right.
So they make a recommendation. It comes to you guys. Yeah. What happens from that point?
So it comes in again to our accident investigation organization, and then they would distribute it. If it was relative to a design, like maybe they think there's a flaw in one of our designs, they would give it to Aircraft Certification Service. And if it's a smaller plane, it would come through my office. We would then look at it. We would look at the technical aspects related to the airplane. We would look at the feasibility of doing it. A lot of times we can meet the intent of an NTSB recommendation by doing something that we know would be easier or simpler to do and still meet the intent. So we take their recommendations very, very seriously. And then if we can mandate them, we do. If we need to wait a while, we may delay doing that. Or we may suggest something slightly different to do that.
And you work specifically with certification of small aircraft. And,
yes.
And these are production aircraft?
Mostly production aircraft. We do, like, you know, the big companies, the major manufacturers. We do have a little bit of involvement in light sport airplanes. But as you know, those have consensus standards. So we just sort of watch from the outside and help with the consensus standards, help with those things. But anything that's manufactured, we look at the design. We also look at the production and make sure that they can continue to produce safe airplanes.
Now, there's been actually a pretty good growth in small aircraft manufacturing over the past decade or so, hasn't there?
There has been it's a huge climb in small airplanes, in light jets, in the light sport community. The last couple of years, the economy has certainly impacted us all the way around. And, you know, we're seeing it drop off in all areas. But I've been in the aviation community a long time, and it'll come back.
Go ahead.
No, after you. Well, I was going to ask, you know, we've seen a number of small jets, you know, being going through certification. What have you been doing with those?
What we do, we're very involved in the certification. So whether it's an airplane that's already been certified or just getting ready to be certified, we're involved. We also, in my office, have recently put out a notice to proposed rulemaking on Part 23 jets. Our first small jet was certified in the 60s, and people forget that. And we've had a number of special conditions. How do you meet the requirements? And we're just now getting ready to put rules out that tell you how to certify a Part 23 jet.
And the Part 23 jet, if you don't know what Part 23 is, that's a fairly new concept.
Yeah.
So Part 23, the way we do aircraft certification, we're divided into a number of regulations. Part 23 is 19,000 pounds and below. If you're going to fly a big airliner, you know, a big airplane, they're in Part 25, which is anything larger than that. You have to meet the requirements. And clearly the requirements for a large jet are more significant, more rigid kind of rules than they are for smaller planes. And then we try and in the smaller planes sort of stratify them a little bit. So the tiniest little airplane doesn't have to meet the same rules that the biggest airplane would have to meet.
Okay, so with your Part 23 jets, I mean, I know with Part 25 there's, you know, issues of having flight data recorders and stuff like that. Is there anything in 23 that would talk to those kind of things?
There's not a mandate to do flight data recorders yet, although we're seeing the industry step up, and there's a lot of much smaller units that people can start using. Some of the manufacturers are putting them on their airplanes from the beginning, and much smaller. It wouldn't be as big as a black box or collect as much data as a black box would. But it's ways to go out there and see what happened. We're seeing them in more and more, and maybe someday we will mandate them in some newer airplanes.
Now, what about modifications to aircraft that are already existing? What's your role with that?
Well, that's you can modify them through what we call supplemental type certificates, mm-hmm. or the STC process, and we, again, write the rules.
Are you involved with it? Is that part of your purview?
Absolutely, the certification and the STC process. If you're going to modify it, sometimes it may be done by a manufacturer. We would work with the manufacturer. Sometimes it's done by an individual. They still have to make the same set of rules, but somebody from our aircraft certification office would work with them and make sure that they met all the rules.
And now you personally deal strictly with more of the manufactured aircraft?
Correct.
And is there at any point where a manufactured aircraft is so modified that it no longer qualifies as...
We have certain rules.
Kind of bumps itself into the experimental category.
Well, we have certain rules that say as you modify airplanes, you have to consider the impact of this modification to everything else that's been done to that airplane. And sometimes it just does get to where it's a one-of-a-kind airplane that you would never be able to reproduce. If somebody wants to go in experimental, they have much more freedom what they can do to their airplane. But if you want to stay as a certified airplane, you've got to meet the rules regardless of how many modifications you do.
Because there are a few restrictions once you do get into that experimental category that would prohibit you from doing certain kinds of operations.
Yeah, it's the operational limitations in experimental on what you can do, and it depends on whether you're, you know, what kind of experimental airplane you are, but your operations are severely limited. But on the other hand, you have freedom to do to the airplane more what you want to do.
And what are some of those rules and restrictions that... somebody's listening and they want to put some knots to you on their.
It would depend if they talk to their local their local offices. They could find out exactly. But sometimes you're limited to certain airspace. You may not be able to fly over populated areas. You may not be able to fly more than 50 miles from your home airport. There's different kind of modifications depending on what you go in. So each is pretty individual. And if you're only going to fly in your own airport and you're not going to go very far, maybe that's a way to go.
And there's going back a little bit to the small jets, there's been a bunch of certification with those recently. Mm-hmm. There was a few problems with the Eclipse jet and mm-hmm. its certification, and they're still working through some of those now. Have you seen any other issues come up?
Well, I think with any airplane, especially in the first year or two, you always see some things that may not be right, and whether it's a jet or a fixed wing, and we've certainly seen some of the other jets, whether it's the Eclipse or Embraer, and we do airworthiness directives, and those, again, come from my office. If we are doing something on a Part 23 airplane, the airworthiness directive, we do that, and it's to correct the safety deficiencies that are identified after it's out there. And Eclipse, like a lot of other companies, are working on how to improve that.
You say after it's out there, so at what point in the process of manufacturing a brand new type of aircraft? I mean, when and where do you get involved and how often and at what sorts of milestone checks are
we
there?
We sort of say that we're involved from cradle to grave. So from the time a manufacturer first thinks of an airplane and before it's even built, he'll come in and meet with people in our offices and make sure that his proposal and what he's thinking meets the rules. Then as they go through the design phase, we continue to be involved. We have type certification meetings and meet with them. After it's certified, the people in our production, our manufacturing offices, they make sure that production continues for every airplane. It meets the original design. And then throughout the life cycle of that airplane, if there's a safety defect in design that's identified, an airplane could be flying for 20 years and maybe seat tracks start to fail, or maybe we see a big number of airspeed indicators aren't working anymore. There's an issue with the pitot system, and we go in and look and say, oops, there is a design issue here, and then we'll put out an airworthiness directive for people to go fix their airplanes.
And some of those things just don't only manifest themselves after 20 years of service.
Absolutely.
Well, we learn new things.
We do. Well, one of the things I think, and when you're being out here at Oshkosh, it's pretty obvious, there's a lot of older airplanes that are flying, and a lot of, when they manufactured their airplanes, we didn't believe they'd be flying 30, 40, 50, 60 years later, and we have to continue to make sure that fleet stays safe as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think that's a huge testament. I mean, look at the DC-3s out here. I mean, just how beautiful and still a versatile airplane that gets used for in everyday use.
And, yeah, the DC-3, and a lot, if you go down and look at the Warbirds, there's airplanes flying here that are just beautiful. And you just see them, and we want to make sure that they can fly for a long time. We also want to make sure that they can continue to be safe.
Okay, well, now if somebody has any questions about aircraft certification, where could they find you here on the field?
There's an FAA building, and it's right at the base of the tower. If you just follow the tower where it is, go in, and we have aircraft certification. We have flight standards, aviation, medicine, accident investigation. All the organizations that work in FAA are in that one location, and they're always happy to take your questions.
And that's different from the Federal Pavilion.
Yes, it is different. It's easy to find, though, because you can see the tower from anywhere. We're right at the base of the tower.
And if somebody did have questions not during the convention, is there a way they could get a hold of you or somebody from the FAA?
Is there a web presence or something for distant listeners?
If you go to FAA.gov, www.faa.gov, and then you can look in through through organizations, go to aircraft certification or whatever you're interested in, and you can find your points of contact there.
All right. Well, we do appreciate you coming in. We've been talking with Kim Smith from the FAA, and you're listening to EAA Radio. Now we're joined by Kim Smith from the Federal Aviation Administration. And what do you do with the FAA?
Well, I work in aircraft certification.
I manage the Small Airplane Directorate, which means we have responsibility for the design certification of all small airplanes, basically 19 passengers and below.
Okay. Now, before we get into that a little bit, I know you were here for the last hour, or the last 15-minute segment, where we were discussing things with the NTSB investigator, and we were talking a little bit about the NTSB-FAA relationship. Yep. So would you like to maybe speak from the FAA side about some of the questions and things we discussed?
I will. I think one of the points he made that was really good is we do have two different roles. The NTSB goes out to see what causes an accident and what you need to do to fix that and make sure it doesn't happen again. We, the FAA, also care about aviation safety, but we always have to consider the economic impact of decisions we're making and technical feasibility. Like he said, they may recommend to do something, but if the technology isn't there to do it yet, we may have to delay meeting the intent of the requirement, the suggestion for, you know, years. And if it's too expensive to the fleet, we may not be able to propose it either. So we do have different roles. We look at it from different ways, which I think probably is a good thing in the big picture.
And I know he mentioned the GO team. Mm-hmm. With the, and there are FAA members involved sometimes with these GO teams? Or
there sure are. We have an Office of Accident Investigation that sometimes sends people out. And also on some of the smaller, like the GA accidents, maybe helicopters, maybe we send from aircraft certification some of our own experts who know that airplane better than maybe the NTSB or the particular accident investigation person would, and they can help provide technical data, technical information about an airplane.
And how is that organized? Let's say at an accident site, there's, you know, the and then you have local authorities sometimes that would be involved, particularly, I guess, depending on the nature of the accident. So how is authority in the hierarchy of the investigation structured?
Well, the way it would happen, if an accident happened, the first on the scene probably would be an FAA person, maybe from the local FISTO or somebody. They may be first on the scene. But once they come there, NTSB has responsibility of the accident site. We work with them. We collaborate. Usually at the scene, people work very, very well together.
And then, as Robert Benson was discussing, they only make recommendations.
Right.
So they make a recommendation. It comes to you guys. Yeah. What happens from that point?
So it comes in again to our accident investigation organization, and then they would distribute it. If it was relative to a design, like maybe they think there's a flaw in one of our designs, they would give it to Aircraft Certification Service. And if it's a smaller plane, it would come through my office. We would then look at it. We would look at the technical aspects related to the airplane. We would look at the feasibility of doing it. A lot of times we can meet the intent of an NTSB recommendation by doing something that we know would be easier or simpler to do and still meet the intent. So we take their recommendations very, very seriously. And then if we can mandate them, we do. If we need to wait a while, we may delay doing that. Or we may suggest something slightly different to do that.
And you work specifically with certification of small aircraft. And,
yes.
And these are production aircraft?
Mostly production aircraft. We do, the big companies, the major manufacturers. We do have a little bit of involvement in light sport airplanes. But as you know, those have consensus standards. So we just sort of watch from the outside and help with the consensus standards, help with those things. But anything that's manufactured, we look at the design. We also look at the production and make sure that they can continue to produce safe airplanes.
Now, there's been actually a pretty good growth in small aircraft manufacturing over the past decade or so, hasn't there?
There has been there was a huge climb in small airplanes, in light jets, in the light sport community. The last couple of years, the economy has certainly impacted us all the way around. And, you know, we're seeing it drop off in all areas, but I've been in the aviation community a long time, and it'll come back.
After you.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, we've seen a number of small jets, you know, being going through certification. What have you been doing with those?
What we do, we're very involved in the certification. So whether it's an airplane that's already been certified or just getting ready to be certified, we're involved. We also, in my office, have recently put out a notice to proposed rulemaking on Part 23 jets. Our first small jet was certified in the 60s, and people forget that. And we've had a number of special conditions. How do you meet the requirements? And we're just now getting ready to put rules out that tell you how to certify a Part 23 jet.
And the Part 23 jet, if you don't know what Part 23 is, that's a fairly new concept.
Yeah.
So Part 23, the way we do aircraft certification, we're divided into a number of regulations. Part 23 is 19,000 pounds and below. If you're going to fly a big airliner, you know, a big airplane, they're in Part 25, which is anything larger than that. You have to meet the requirements. And clearly, the requirements for a large jet are more significant, more rigid kind of rules than they are for small airplanes. And then we try and, in the small airplanes, sort of stratify them a little bit. So the tiniest little airplane doesn't have to meet the same rules that the biggest airplane would have to meet.
Okay, so with your Part 23 jets, I mean, I know with Part 25, there's, you know, issues of having flight data recorders and stuff like that. Is there anything in 23 that would talk to those kind of things?
There's not a mandate to do flight data recorders yet, although we're seeing the industry step up, and there's a lot of much smaller units that people can start using. Some of the manufacturers are putting them on their airplanes from the beginning, and much smaller. It wouldn't be as big as a black box or collect as much data as a black box would. But it's ways to go out there and see what happened. We're seeing them in more and more, and maybe someday we will mandate them in some newer airplanes.
Now, what about modifications to aircraft that are already existing? What's your role with that?
Well, that's you can modify them through what we call supplemental type certificates, mm-hmm. or the STC process, and we, again, write the rules.
Are you involved with that part of your purview?
Absolutely, the certification and the STC process. If you're going to modify it, sometimes it may be done by a manufacturer. We would work with the manufacturer. Sometimes it's done by an individual. They still have to make the same set of rules, but somebody from our aircraft certification office would work with them and make sure that they met all the rules.
And now you personally deal strictly with more of the manufactured aircraft?
Correct.
And is there at any point where a manufactured aircraft is so modified that it no longer qualifies as...
We have certain rules.
Kind of bumps itself into the experimental category.
Well, we have certain rules that say as you modify airplanes, you have to consider the impact of this modification to everything else that's been done to that airplane. And sometimes it just does get to where it's a one-of-a-kind airplane that you would never be able to reproduce. If somebody wants to go in experimental, they have much more freedom what they can do to their airplane. But if you want to stay as a certified airplane, you've got to meet the rules regardless of how many modifications you do.
Because there are a few restrictions once you do get into that experimental category that would prohibit you from doing certain kinds of operations.
Yeah, it's the operational limitations in experimental on what you can do, and it depends on whether you're, you know, what kind of experimental airplane you are, but your operations are severely limited. But on the other hand, you have freedom to do to the airplane what you want to do.
And what are some of those rules and restrictions that...
Well,
somebody's listening and they want to put some knots to you on their.
It would depend if they talk to their local local offices, they could find out exactly. But sometimes you're limited to certain airspace. You may not be able to fly over populated areas. You may not be able to fly more than 50 miles from your home airport. There's different kind of modifications depending on what you go in. So each is pretty individual. And if you're only going to fly in your own airport and you're not going to go very far, maybe that's a way to go.
And there's going back a little bit to the small jets. There's been a bunch of certification with those recently. There was a few problems with the Eclipse jet and its certification, and they're still working through some of those now. Have you seen any other issues come up?
Well, I think with any airplane, especially in the first year or two, you always see some things that may not be right, and whether it's a jet or a fixed wing, and we've certainly seen some of the other jets, whether it's the Eclipse or Embraer, and we do airworthiness directives, and those, again, come from my office.
Now,